My name's Annette Wickham. I'm one of the curators for the Academy's permanent collection. And unusually, all of the works in this exhibition are drawn from the Academy's own holdings. So I'm going to talk about Turner's watercolour of Durham Cathedral from the river from the 1790s. But I'll just say a few words about how this work and the others in this room fit into the general theme of the exhibition before I look at that in more detail. So you'll have come through the other galleries and you'll see that really the main theme is about the importance of printmaking in the development of the landscape genre in Britain and how the classical tradition of Claude, Poussin, Salvator Rosa was disseminated mainly through prints in Britain and how prints also helped to develop the genre when it was taken up by people like Richard Wilson, Constable Gainsborough and Turner. But the significance of this room is really to highlight another strand in the development of landscape in Britain, and that was the homegrown tradition of the topographical watercolour. So that had quite modest beginnings as record drawings with just a bit of wash as a tint to make it look more attractive. But by the mid-18th century, it had really become much more ambitious, and people like Paul Sandby were producing large watercolours or gouaches which were designed to be able to hold the wall in an exhibition next to an oil painting. So on that side you can see, for instance, Windsor Castle by Paul Sandby, which is a good example of the sort of work that was being produced. And on this side, two watercolours by Michelangelo Rucca, who was one of his pupils. And both of those, the one on this side is the Gatehouse of Battle Abbey in Sussex, and the other one is an abbey in Wales. And we know that both of those were actually exhibited at the Academy in the 1790s. So that's the sort of thing that was being produced. And the significance of Turner's work here is that he really grew up in that topographical tradition, and it remained important to him throughout his career, as we'll hear in a minute. The whole topographical genre was really dismissed by a lot of people at the time, and sometimes since, as quite a sort of lowly genre. Henry Fuseli, who was the professor of painting at the Academy, dismissed the whole thing as the tame delineation of a given spot. So although they recognised that it was often very skillful in terms of the way technically that they were painted, these sorts of views, they seem to write it off as not creative enough, not like history painting and not showing genius. And so it was really belittled at the time. But nevertheless, it was a very important part of Turner's development. And also that reading is quite, well, it's not the full story, really. There are some grey areas. You can see, for instance, the influence of the sublime in some of these watercolours. I think right down at the end, there's a watercolour by Rucca of the North Foreland Lighthouse with these glowering clouds. And a lot of the works you'll see here show medieval ruins. So it's also to do with the associations of the site and their history. So there's more to it than just recording a building. But onto Turner's actual work here, the Durham Cathedral. It's quite modest as in terms of his oeuvre as a whole, but it's quite interesting in itself for several different reasons. It was painted at quite a pivotal time in his career in the 1790s, just as he was elected an associate of the Royal Academy and shortly before he became a full Royal Academician. It very much shows how he had really grown up in this topographical genre and how he'd been trained in this way. He attended the Royal Academy schools from the age of 14, but at the same time he also worked for architectural draftsmen, and he also studied at Dr. Munro's unofficial watercolour academy. So there were several strands to his training, but this was the most important one at that time, because all the works that he produced up until 1796 were all in watercolour and they were all topographical views like this. It shows him slightly moving away from the strict definition of topography, because although by this stage he was very capable of doing a very correct architectural drawing of the appearance of Durham Cathedral, he chose not to record every stone. Instead, he chose this view which puts the cathedral as the main focus, but it's at a distance. So it's really more not about recording the exact appearance of the building, but really about the experience of viewing an imposing medieval building like Durham. And so it's a view really from across the bridge and the river, which gives you this kind of hazy effect. Quite an interesting tone of colour he's chosen. Obviously light and colour were, you know, big concerns for Turner throughout his career, and you can see that even early on. It was in the summer that he visited Durham, But I think the idea that it was imbued with this orangey glow is maybe a little unlikely, and probably has something to do with the fact that he was studying other artists' depictions of Italy and of Mediterranean countries. He'd never been himself at this stage, but he did have an extensive knowledge already of views of those countries, and he seems to have imbued Durham with a little bit of that. In terms of his technique, it's also quite interesting. It looks fairly standard, although we know he became very innovative in his later career. But even then, he was showing some signs of experimenting. He'd actually gone to see the painting that you can see next to it, Rooker's Battle Abbey. He'd seen that in the Academy exhibition in 1792. And we know that because he took his sketchbook with him and he made some little copies, just of parts of it, which are now in the Tate Gallery. And what he was concentrating on was the sort of play of light across the masonry and the technique that Rooker used for that, which was known as colour scaling. It sounds pretty straightforward. With watercolour painting, you're always going from light to dark. And with colour scaling, it was just a case of using the same tone in different parts of the composition at the same time. So, for instance, this you can see here and here, which sounds very straightforward, but actually if you're painting, the temptation is to splot the paint all over the place in a not very organised fashion. But this was quite a controlled way of painting, so he'd have to decide where the shade was going to be in each part of the drawing before he started, more or less. So it is quite a composition. It's not about plein air painting. He made a whole lot of sketches of Durham on his visit of the Northeast in 1797, but this would have been painted in London, probably in his studio sometime later. And so he'd already would plan where the areas of different colour and shading were going to be. But having said that, he claimed not to follow too much of a methodical process. He is recorded by another artist, Joseph Farrington, in 1799 as coming to tea. And Farrington says, "He told me he has no systematic process for making drawings. He avoids any particular mode that he may not fall into manner, and by washing and occasionally rubbing out, he at last expresses in some degree the idea in his mind." So he was already somewhat experimental, but very interested in the techniques of his peers and contemporaries. But as is often the case with Turner, and as I was saying is possibly the case with some of the other works in this room, it's not just about recording a particular place. It's also about its historical associations and sometimes things that were, you know, in the recent past. So it's possibly significant in this painting that Turner placed this Galilee Chapel at Durham in quite a prominent position, because his friend Thomas Girton painted almost exactly the same view a year later, but in his case the bridge covers that chapel, so it seems to have been a deliberate choice on Turner's part to include that. And that might allude to a bit of controversy which had been going on in the preceding years surrounding the architect James Wyatt, who Turner also had worked for, but maybe they didn't get on that well if he was drawing attention to this, because Wyatt had been employed to restore the cathedral, but he had also got a reputation amongst some of his critics as the destroyer, because he took, his attitude to some of the medieval buildings was not exactly what we would now do in terms of restoration. He would just start to knock parts of them down. And in this case, with the Galilee Chapel, this originally had been meant to be built at the other end of the cathedral, but cracks appeared in the masonry, and the medieval masons decided that that was St. Cuthbert deciding that it shouldn't be there, partially because it was the Lady Chapel where the women were to worship, and St. Cuthbert didn't like women, so they put it at the other end. And so Wyatt's idea was to go right back to basics and get rid of that altogether. So there'd been a lot of debate about this just in the few years before Turner painted this little watercolour. So even in a small work like this, he seems to have been alluding to something which had been going on at the time. And lastly, it's also quite interesting, this work, in terms of Turner's attempts to become a Royal Academician. Unlike Constable, who had to wait years and years, Turner got in quite quickly. And that seems to have been not something that he left to fate. The academicians obviously recognised his talent, but he made sure that they did. So he went around canvassing support for his election, which was usual, but he also would offer to paint a work for some of the academicians that he visited. And this is an example of one of the works that he painted. So he would show them his sketchbooks of the latest tour that he'd been on and say, well, if you choose a view that you like, I'll paint that up for you. And this is almost certainly the one that he painted for a portraitist called John Hoppner. And it's odd that it's come back to the Academy. It was actually, we don't know how it got from one to the other, but it went from John Hoppner to the architect John Yen, who was also an academician, and his daughter Augusta Thackeray eventually gave it back to the Academy with a lot of these watercolours as well. So it's a nice connection there. And it's interesting, just to end on the note, that he painted this just a year or two before Dolbaden Castle, which you can see in the other room, of 1800. That was his diploma work, which each academician has to present to the Academy when they're elected. And it really shows the different registers that Turner could work in. I said he worked exclusively as a watercolourist up until about 1796. From that time, he started to paint in oil and watercolour, partially to make sure that he was accepted as an academician, because there was still a stigma, not just about topographical work, but about watercolour as well. It wasn't seen as sort of high art that the Academy wanted to promote. And so most academicians who were watercolourists, like Sandby and Turner, also had to exhibit oils as well. But as you can see from the two works, Turner was equally successful in both. And although he eventually more or less stopped showing his watercolours at the Academy later in life, they were still hugely important in his work. And as you can see next door, things like the print series of the picturesque views were entirely based on his watercolour output. So it stayed hugely significant in his career, as we all know from the works in the Tate and elsewhere. But that brings us to the end of this short talk. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask. Thank you. Thank you.